This is an I Am Listening exclusive podcast.
Not everyone might be able to go vegan or vegetarian, but whether it's taking a one day a week where you do take that vegan option or that vegetarian option just to reduce the carbon footprint of your foods. On the similar topic, whether it's buying local in your local greengrocers rather than going to supermarket and buying a kiwi that's been flown from halfway across the world, buying fruit and veg that is grown in your county. All of these little things add up to a huge impact, both in Kent and globally.
Hello and welcome to this Tread Lightly podcast from us at the Raynham Eco Hub. My name is Kaylee.
And I'm Liz.
And this podcast is where we delve a little bit deeper into those conversations with local everyday heroes that are doing small and impactful changes. We hope that you get as much out of this as me and Liz do and that you also laugh just as much too. Today we have the absolute pleasure of talking to Tom from the Kent Wildlife Trust. As you know, we are keen supporters of our local Kent Wildlife Trust, and so we're really excited to have him here to come and talk to us a little bit about the work that they do and also their awards. So get comfy, get a cuppa and have a little listen.
Nice to have you here, Tom. Thank you for coming along from Kent Wildlife Trust.
No, thanks for inviting me.
I sent you a couple of questions before we started recording today, and I always love to know what people's why is. It's really interesting because you kind of then get a bit of a deeper understanding of kind of where you've come from to do the work that you're in. So firstly, what is your role at Kent Wildlife Trust?
So I'm the education officer at Kent Wildlife Trust. So my sort of journey into the conservation sector is maybe not a typical one, but no one I've talked to at Kent Wildlife Trust did take a typical route into conservation necessarily. While I was at school, I became really passionate about wildlife and environmentalism. Two geography teachers while I was at secondary school really sort of turned me on to that sort of world. And I then went on and studied geography at University of Southampton. While I was there, I volunteered for Hampshire Wildlife Trust, and I was this close to actually going on and doing an environmental master's degree. Life took a different route and I ended up being a teacher for 10 years.
Wowzers.
But did you teach in Kent?
I taught in Kent, yeah.
Where did you teach?
I taught in Broadstairs for 5 years, but I was also teaching in Malvern for 2 years, which is sort of Worcestershire way, and in Coventry for 2 years as well.
And did you go to school in Kent as well?
I did, yeah.
Oh, where did you go to school?
Yeah, Broadstairs Upton Junior School, which is then the school that I ended up teaching in for
wow,
5 years.
Wow, that's cool. Full circle.
Yeah. Absolutely. Ended up actually being a head of year to one of the people who taught me when I was a pupil at school.
Oh, I love stories.
Lovely full circle,
like
lovely lady.
So how did you, so what's your why? So why are you now doing what you're doing? What kind of spurs you on to kind of
so,
do it?
Even though my life took a sort of different route, I was always still really passionate and engaged with nature, but obviously loved the job I was doing in teaching. But then when I saw this job come up for an education officer at Kent Wildlife Trust, for me, it seemed like the perfect marriage of those two worlds for me. And it was about the time I was looking for a career change as it was. So a career in education and in wildlife at Kent Wildlife Trust just
How
seemed like
perfect.
The perfect job. Absolutely. Yeah.
So what do you do day to day with the Kent Wildlife Trust, and what do the Kent Wildlife Trust overall kind of encourage you to do?
So my role within Kent Wildlife Trust is primarily around engaging with children and families and trying to tackle what we'd call nature disconnectedness among the people of Kent. So our Wilder Kent 2030 strategy aims to have 25% of the population of Kent by the year 2030 having or taking meaningful action for wildlife. So my role in that is to help engage young people and families in nature, hopefully therefore instill that love of nature and the environment at a very young age that hopefully they're going to carry on throughout life. So we start off with the smallest small with our Nature Tots programs, which is kind of a parent and toddler group, but forest school ethos. We're outdoors all day, they're in the mud, they're exploring wildlife, and that's from sort of 18 months up to 5 years. We do school visits where children and school groups come to us at Tyland Barn or at Seven Oaks. They do things like pond dipping and mini beast hunts and, seeing a child's face first time they find a baby newt and things like that. That's where you get that lifelong love of nature from.
Do you know what happened the other week? We had an event in our town, and it was a Halloween event, but it was all about autumn and kind of the things that come out at night and all that sort of stuff. And this little lad come up and he was like, "What's that at this table?" And it was a hedgehog.
Never. He didn't know what a hedgehog was, and he was about five. And I thought, out of everything that's gone on in that evening, the fact that that kid's gone away knowing what a hedgehog was made my heart really happy. Sorry,
absolutely,
I digress.
But that sort of is what I was saying about the nature disconnectedness. Yeah, there is a generation that's growing up, because the UK is one of the most nature-depleted countries in Europe.
Is it?
So we, in terms of the land we've given over or we've left to wildlife, is we are one of the most nature-depleted countries in Europe.
That's so depressing.
So as a wildlife trust, as Kent Wildlife Trust, we're the biggest conservation charity within the county. Our aim is to have more people connected with nature, more people taking meaningful action for nature, so that hopefully by 2030 and beyond, we've got a county that is more climate resilient, that is more wildlife abundant.
What would it look like then? So you say that people be more connected and take action. What describe that? What is that?
I think it starts with them engaging with us in our school visits, in our family events that we run. We do things like holiday club and birthday parties. That sparks the initial love of nature. But then for them to carry on so that they're taking meaningful action, whether it's at home in their garden and they're planting wildlife friendly.
Kind of independent from you. Is that what
Absolutely.
You mean?
So there's only a certain amount we can do as a trust, as 200 members of staff and a huge team of volunteers, because what we do, we couldn't do without volunteers. But we're limited. What we want to do is have communities within Kent taking meaningful action for themselves as well. So that it's not just on the conservation charities in Kent, but everyone in Kent is doing their little bit for nature. And the more everyone does, the more climate resilient, the more nature abundant our county will be.
Amazing.
And what's the kind of barriers that you come across to making those aims a reality?
Sometimes it's confidence or lack of understanding or knowledge, or not knowing what it is they can do or how much they feel they need to do. Sometimes it's that barrier of is my little bit enough? Is that going to be
enough? We hear that
enough?
All the time.
And what do you say to people about that when they're going, I've got a small garden, I couldn't plant a tree, I can't research. We had a conversation. One of our podcasts was around kind of climate injustice and that perception that there are some people that feel they can do more than others. If you can buy an electric car, great. But how do you empower people that do feel so, that they've got so little at their fingertips in terms of their ability to make change?
I mean, there's always something. So you might have a huge garden, a huge lawn where you can leave over a small corner to wildlife. But even if you just got a balcony that you can put out some pots of pollinator-friendly flowers that then attract the pollinators, you're doing your little bit there. There are decisions that you can make in your everyday life that are not necessarily going to impact on the wildlife in your garden, but are going to have a bigger impact on sustainability in the environment worldwide, whether it's cycling to work or cycling to the shops instead of taking the car.
I got what you mean, yeah.
Whether it's taking, not everyone might be able to go vegan or vegetarian, but whether it's taking a one day a week where you do take that vegan option or that vegetarian option just to reduce the carbon footprint of your foods. On the similar topic, whether it's buying local in your local greengrocers rather than going to supermarket and buying a kiwi that's been flown from halfway across the world, buying fruit and veg that is grown in your county. All of these little things add up to a huge impact, both in Kent and globally.
Do you feel like as a trust you are on target to meet your aims for 2030?
It's going to be a challenge, but I think absolutely it's a challenge that we can do as a trust.
I'm so glad you just said that. I think I would have cried if you said no, absolutely not. No, that's good.
We will achieve it, but it's not something we could do together. We need everyone in Kent pulling together, and that's where things like our Wilder Kent Awards come in. So Wilder Kent Awards were launched in 2020. So it's now just coming up to its fourth year. We're launching Wilder Kent Awards.
We share a birthday.
Oh, for Rainy Mika Hub. I think you were Wilder Kent Award winners a couple of years ago, I believe.
She was in lockdown, wasn't it? 2020.
Yeah, it might have been a few years ago.
That was such a funny and lovely day. It was very hot. I have got a picture to prove how hot it was. I was so red, like a tomato. But I didn't realise that was your first one.
Yeah, so it was before my time because I only started last year, but launched in 2020. We've gone from strength to strength each year. So it's open to schools, community groups, nurseries, colleges, universities, and towns, villages, cities can enter as well. So we're trying to get as many people in the county involved in taking positive action for nature. And that can be from the littlest things like recycling your crisp packets or choosing to walk to school rather than drive to school, all the way up to installing solar panels and monitoring your carbon use in your school. There are all sorts of actions people can take, schools, community groups can take. And we just want as much of Kent involved in that as possible. So 2024 launches on November the 20th, so a week from now.
So does that mean that your nomination's open for next round?
Absolutely. So every time I go into a school and talk to a school about the Wild Kent Awards, they're often really shocked and pleased to find out that, oh, we're already doing that. Oh, we do that. Oh, we do that. So my response is, well, yes, you're already doing a lot of these great positive actions. Get yourself nominated for Wilder Kent Awards. Submit your entry for Wilder Kent Awards. Get that recognition. Then that starts you on your journey for the next year. So you're already doing that, that, and that. Brilliant. What about this? Try a bit more of this. Why not try building your own vegetable garden?
Helps set a benchmark, doesn't it?
It gets the ball rolling. And for me, when I go into schools, what I really like doing is connecting with the pupils. Because when you get those really passionate pupils, when you get those really passionate kids that can take on the project themselves.
I can see that's one of your joys. If you could see his face, listeners, his face is full of joy when you say that.
I come from, obviously, the other side of the fence. I was a teacher. I know what it's like in schools to be a teacher who has got an awful lot on their plate. And the last thing they want to do is take on another project. And no matter how passionate they might feel about wildlife and sustainability, there's a lot on their plate. So my way of getting across to them is give it to a group of pupils, give it to your school council or your eco club, and let them run with it. Let them be the ones to plan the project. Let them
advice.
Be the ones to nag parents and nag TAs and other teachers to get them involved in
That's
projects.
That's so good. And I guess they must love that you were a former teacher, so you view this through a really kind of understanding lens. Sustainable, realistic options for them.
Yeah, and I'm able to see both sides of the fence now. I'm able to see it from my role in the sort of sustainability and environmental world, but I've also been on the other side with teachers and in schools, so I know exactly how they're feeling as well.
So do you find the majority of applications are from schools? Is that kind of your focus, or is it a real mix?
I'd say around 60%, 70% of our applications do come from schools. Community groups make up a large proportion of that as well. And then the universities in Kent University won gold last year, so we've got Kent University applied.
What did they do to get gold? Tell us what sat behind that application.
So Kent University worked really, really well with their ground staff to give over really large areas of their grounds to nature and to wildlife. But they were also really good at the sustainability and their carbon reduction. I know that they had a climate cafe to talk with their students about eco-anxiety. And they brought a whole community together within the university to sort of make more of their students aware.
Do you want to live more sustainably, but you just don't know where to start?
Did you, like me, sign up for Veganuary and accidentally buy chicken sausages on day two?
Does the whole eco thing leave you feeling confused and sometimes overwhelmed? If so, this is the podcast for you.
Remember to check us out on our socials on Facebook and Instagram, the Raynham Eco Hub.
Have you got any standout award winners that you can kind of tell us about? Any that really shone out for you, even if they didn't win gold, but just kind of...
Yeah, so I've got a few that always stick in my mind just because it's sort of the ingenuity of they've seen a problem and they've overcome it in a really lovely way. There was one school that persistently had problem with flooding in a certain area of their field. Every year it got flooded. Every year they had to get contractors in to sort of drain the flooding. And then when they took on the Wilder Kent Awards and they're looking at how they can make their campus more climate friendly, they decided to use that flooding as a positive and turned it into a bog garden. So they found lots of plants and species that were going to thrive in a boggy environment, planted all of these, I can't remember the names of species, the plants they used, but they planted a lot of these sort of bog-friendly flowers and plants, and that helped to not only help with the drainage, but also help with the biodiversity in the area as well.
So help their flooding issue as well.
Help their flooding issue because the sort of plants were able to take up more of that that water, and help with their issue. Isn't it?
See, I love that. It's not even thinking outside the box, is it? It's just kind of going, okay, this is the environment that we have got. What? How can we make the best use of that? Sometimes. Yeah,
and that overlap between like sustainability and solving problems. Mm. So in that sense, you've solved a problem, you've saved money because you don't need to get the contractors
exactly.
in.
Yeah.
And that's gold for us,
well,
isn't it?
That's another thing, isn't it? Money is always something that people say to us, which is like, oh, I don't have the money to do this. I don't have the money to do that. And sometimes we just say, actually, some of these things can actually save you money. So like when you're talking about some schools wanting to change their energy providers and wanting to be able to, you know, do some big changes, it's like, it doesn't have to always cost you money. In fact, it could save the planet and money at the same time.
That's often my first in when talking with teachers and pupils, is that a lot of the things they can do are free. And, you know, things like their recycling schemes in school, they don't have to pay for them. The pupils can set them up and run with that. Having energy monitors in the classroom to make sure that each child, or that each class, the lights are switched off and the computer screen's not. If you get the right child, they will not let you out of the classroom until that light
you've
is
got
switched
one of them.
Off.
When my son was about 8, he was the energy monitor in our house, right?
Absolutely.
And he just loved bossing everybody around and being like, you've left that light on, you're leaving this on, leaving that on. At the moment, we've got a big thing about water. So anyone that kind of wastes water... my husband drained pasta straight into the sink the other day, and my daughter was like, absolutely not. Yeah, so you're right. Get the right kids.
Children love telling adults off. They love telling other children off. So again, talking about the water wastage, if that is a message that starts to resonate around the school, then they're going to be talking to each other about that in the toilets and not pressing the water and not wasting all the paper out of the paper dispensers and things like that.
Because that was me as a kid. I said to my daughter the other day, she was talking about wasting water. I said, you know what we used to do as a kid? We used to get, you know, the paper towels, soak them and like chuck them on the ceiling. Did you ever do that?
No, I wet them and then we turn them into like tiles, so you'd cover all of the mirrors in like wet paper towels.
So I don't think kids do that nowadays, because Bella went, Mum, that's such a waste. And I was like,
I was that person. Sorry about that.
I was that person. Sorry about that. But yeah, maybe generations have changed.
I think that's a generational thing. Yeah. I think generations now are much more aware, and they are talking about it from a very young age.
It's not cool as well. Like, I loved the other day that my son went, he's just started secondary school, and a kid in their outdoor space killed a bee in lunchtime, and they went for this kid. They were raging at him, and he was like, you know, kind of, you know, big confident kid that thought it would be cool, and once upon a time that would have got a laugh, but everyone was like, what the hell are you doing? And that shift, it did fill me with joy in some ways, that they were all appalled by that behavior. There was nobody that was cheering this kid on, and I think those little changes in just, it just goes without saying that is just not acceptable anymore.
I was going to say, in a bee as well, everyone loves a bee.
I remember one PE lesson when I was teaching, I lost half an hour to the whole class because we all rallied around saving a bee, because it was end of summer, it was crawling, it obviously needed a bit of support and a bit of help.
They will remember that lesson forever though, won't they?
They will. And you know, it got a really good education opportunity out of it. I know my purpose was, I was meant to be teaching them football or whatever it was, but actually what they learned from that, and the role that bee played, and why just one bee is so important, why we should try and help the bees.
Your interruptions are your work is what I want to interject with there. And I think that was a perfect one. Did you save the bee?
We got it to a safe space. We left it with a little dish of sugar water. And my message at that point was, we leave it be. Pardon the pun.
Leave it be.
We leave it be.
And, you're good, Tommy. You should do a podcast.
Leave it be. Oh, I love that. This is filling me with joy today. I can see why you as a teacher. I feel like you would make a really, really good teacher. So the awards... nominations are going to be opening.
So on the 20th of November, they launch, and that's sort of our chance to say, this is what you can do. So if you go online and sign up for our Wilder Kent Awards, you'll receive your brochure, which is full of tips and hints of things that you can do to help make your space more wildlife friendly, no matter the size, no matter your budget, no matter how many people you've got within your group. It could be an eco community group of maybe 10 members. It could be a secondary school of up to 1500 children. And on the 20th of November, sign up, you'll receive your booklet. And then between November and May the 31st, which is the submission date, you'll have all of that time to involve your group in a range of projects.
Tom, talk to me. I'm not very good at writing. How would it be for getting the actual application form to you? Is it a big, long, complicated form?
Absolutely not. No, all we want to hear is what you're doing at school. Some people will want to tell us absolutely every minute detail of what they've done, and they'll want to include photos and videos and posters that their pupils have made, and podcasts that their school have recorded, and blogs they've written, which is great. We love to see it all. We love to share it. Oh, there are schools that do have podcasts. There are are schools that have they have their own news shows that go out weekly. Yes, there are lots of schools that do love to do these things. Yeah, whether they're eco-related or they're showing the news of the school. Yeah,
that is so good. Sorry,
I think when I was at school, it was the school newsletter. But I think obviously times have moved on and technology's moved with it. It's podcasts and form's incredibly easy. All you need to do is tell us what you're doing, essentially. So it could be as long as you want,
or
it could be as short as you want. We've got a submission form. It's about 3 pages long, and it's just got boxes to say what you've done within each criteria. So we've got 3 categories. The first one's protecting wildlife, and there's different criteria within that to sort of show you how you can protect wildlife within your grounds. Second category is sustainability and carbon reduction. And then the third one is engaging with nature. So tell us what you are doing as a group.
So you could just be doing one, but not the other at the minute,
absolutely,
or whatever.
Absolutely.
And you're not checking for spelling errors and things like that.
We are not checking for spelling.
I'm conscious that people can sometimes look at these forms and say, oh, this is a headache. So I think we can rule out the
We've tried to make it as easy and straightforward as possible. It just needs to be a submission to tell us what you're doing. If you can include photos and videos as evidence of what you've done, even better, because we can then share that and help spread the message of the fantastic work that your group's doing. But essentially, it's just a submission form that you get when you sign up in November.
Yeah.
So my tip would be that every time you do something, just make a note of it in the form, so that by time May runs around, you're just submitting that form. You're not sitting down and typing it all out.
It's been a working
sort of document as you go.
Yeah, that's such a good idea. And can I just give you a little bit of feedback now, because I did email the Kent Wildlife Trust a little while ago to tell them how amazing your website is.
Oh really?
It is so good, and it's so accessible. And I talk about this so much because I am not academic. I'm not able to read research papers. I'm not able to listen and decipher all of these big environmental words that get thrown about. And so your website is so accessible for somebody like me that can just read it. It has pictures, which I'm not saying that as a, you know, an unkind thing. That's really, really good. It just makes it so family friendly.
We've got a very good comms team that work very hard on the website and work very hard on the content and the accessibility of it all.
Give them a shout out.
And whenever someone comes to me and says, what can we do for the Wilder Kent Awards? We want to achieve this, but we're not sure how. I always point them to the actions part of our website. So it's Kent Wildlife Trust /actions, and that page has got so much. So if you're wanting to build a pond, it's got about 5 different ways you can build a pond, right from a tub pond all the way up to a sort of mini lake within your grounds.
And I followed your instructions to build a pond last summer.
They are really straightforward. They've got images, they've got tips, all there.
Really good. So shout out to your comms team, because they are actually amazing. I mean, if they ever get, you know, spare 5 minutes and want to
build
our website, I'd give them a cup of tea, really.
I'm sure they'll work for a cup of tea and some biscuits, yeah.
There you go, you've signed them up there, Tom.
Thank you so much
for
coming and sharing and telling us all. I'm going to take that story about the bee now with me, wherever I go.
You're welcome.
Thank you so, so much.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Raynham Eco Hub's Tread Lightly podcast. If, like us, you're trying to be more sustainable, then like and subscribe to get notified when we release new episodes, or even better, share with your friends and family. Hope you enjoyed today's episode, and thank you for joining us. Stay safe, keep going, and find us on socials. Cheers, guys.
This has been an I Am Listening exclusive podcast. For more information, head over to our website, iam-listening.co.uk.